This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang. We're here every week to talk about subjects that we think are important and educational and topical and interesting for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. And I guess of great interest to the public in the last couple of months has been a subject that we're going to be discussing today, and which is very near and dear to my heart, because as you know, I'm obsessed with Law and Order on a program, and we always, when we have an opportunity, we talk about, you know, laws that apply to us or reforms in the laws, and also talk to people who are involved in law enforcement, as well as community affairs, as well as cultural matters, as well as the theater, which, as you know, is my second obsession. But to get back to my first one, the supporters recently of sweeping changes to the state criminal justice laws regarding discovery rules and the bail system have been describing the reforms, at the moves, as reforms aimed at helping to curb mass incarceration and reducing the strategic advantage held by prosecutors. So as part of this year's state budget, the lawmakers and the governor approved what are known as sweeping changes, or what are called sweeping changes, in law enforcement regarding bail and discovery issues. But particularly, I think the public, you, my listeners, have been hearing about these bail reforms. And what do they mean, and how are they going to apply to the average citizen? How are they going to apply to the justice system as a whole? What effect are they going to have on law and order and on people's safety in the community? And these are all issues which the rights of defendants, as well as the rights of, law-abiding citizens, are at issue. And I think a lot of people are concerned and kind of confused about what this means. So I decided to go to an expert who is, of course, a colleague and a friend of mine. And he has graciously agreed during the holidays, which are really busy, and he has a million other things to do. But I talked him into coming to the studio to talk to us, to my dear listeners on Target, about this subject, because the reforms that we're discussing are going to go into effect January 1st, which, as you know, is upon us. Right? It's like before you know it, it's going to happen, right? So in the studio with us is Judge Timothy Fronczak, and Judge Fronczak has been involved as a all aspects, all stages of the criminal justice system for many years. He's been a prosecutor, a judge, an educator, and now he is an educator on Target, right?
Exactly.
Did I leave anything out? Prosecutor.
And Director of Continuing Legal Education at the Assigned Counsel Program. So my job now
position.
Is to make sure that the Assigned Counsel defense attorneys are up to speed on developments in the law. But otherwise, you pretty much
did I give a synopsis of an illustrious career of, I don't know, how many years in one sentence, right?
I don't know if I call it illustrious, but I'd certainly call it fulfilling and enjoyable.
Well, and it has been illustrious, Judge Fronczak, because as I pointed out, and as you're saying, you have continued to educate people on all sides, what I think is important as an educator in the law school and moot court and law students and now public defenders. So it covers all sides, right?
I think so.
Every side. Okay, now let's talk about what this law is. First of all, what is the, when they say bail law reform, what is being reformed? Maybe people should know what the law is before the changes, you know what I mean?
Well,
is that a good question?
Yeah,
I think it is
a good, because it's always nice to know what it
what's
was
being
before
changed. Yeah,
you,
that's
you
what
find
I
out
thought.
What's going to, what it's going to be. Up until now, or January 1st, the judges had an awful lot of discretion and decision-making authority to decide when any defendant appears in front of him or her, whether or not that person is going to be released to the community, straight up OR, or with conditions, or having to set bail in order to secure their release. And now, with the changes that are coming, the judges will have far less latitude and decision-making authority to decide that question, because the legislature is making that decision for them in many respects by taking money bail or monetary bail out of the equation in all but the most serious of cases. So it's I think that's the most dramatic change, that monetary bail is going to become the exception and not the rule. And the goal, at least as far as the legislature is concerned, is to promote liberty pre-trial or before disposition of the case, rather than institutional confinement in places like the Erie County Holding Center, if you're in Western New York, or in Rikers Island.
The infamous.
Rikers Island, which I think is on its way to being closed anyway. But I think that's the impetus behind it, to dramatically reduce the number of people who are in jail on a pretrial predisposition basis.
So let's give it an example of what it is now. A person is, we're saying, somebody is charged with a crime, and now, no matter what the crime is, I guess, the judge has the ability or the discretion, let's say, to say the person who's charged with a crime cannot be released, they're arrested, and cannot be released unless they make such and such bail, whether it be $100, $1,000, and or a bondsman or any other, you know, combination, right?
Correct. So if somebody comes in charged with petty larceny for stealing from the Galleria Mall, and let's say that person has a long history of similar offenses, criminal convictions, or their record indicates that they have a history of not returning to court when they're supposed to, a judge can and would likely take that all into consideration in deciding what type of bail would be most likely to secure this person's return to court. And so it could be cash or bond. Go to an insurance company bail bond or set property, or it could be a less secured form such as a signature bond. But come January the 1st, if you're dealing with that scenario, the judge is going to be required to either release that person on his or her own recognizance or on not so-called non-monetary conditions. Bail will not be an option for that person.
Monetary bail.
Monetary.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
When
cash,
we say
bond,
cash.
Where you have to expend some amount of money.
Right.
And really, there are only two misdemeanors now for which bail will be an option, meaning cash bail, and that will be sex offenses and criminal contempt in a domestic violence situation. And that also includes many, if not most, nonviolent felonies, whereas the court could set bail now up until December 31st. If it's a nonviolent felony that's not on the list of qualifying felonies for cash bail, the judge will have to either set or release the person OR or set non-monetary conditions. And there are other options that the judge will have available to him or her, but don't involve monetary bail. The only time judges will be able to set bail now will be on those limited qualifying offenses that I mentioned, which also include violent felonies. However, will not include things like burglary in the second degree. So if somebody goes into somebody's home with the intent to commit a crime or commits a robbery in the second degree, aided by another person who's actually involved, bail in the money sense, money bail will not be an option. Court will have to do lesser alternatives to the traditional cash bail option.
Now, how is this considered, considering the safety of the public, in the sense that you just gave an example, and you know people are upset about this, and they've approached me, you know, on the street, and we've seen editorials and opinions and letters to the editor about it. The example you gave, if somebody burglarized somebody's home and was arrested, what we're telling the people, the public, and our listeners now is they, when they're arrested and they go before a judge, the judge has to release them in some way, shape, or form. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. And to answer your question about public safety, mm-hmm. you and I both know that every judge in his or her mind, when making a decision on bail, we'll look at the person, their history, and the crime. Is it a crime of violence? Does that person pose a threat to a specific individual if released? And more generally, to the public at large. While that may be an unspoken consideration that every judge, whether they admit it or not, will will have go through their mind in setting bail, and I think rightfully so. As a matter of record and law, that is not a factor that the court is permitted to consider in state court in deciding on bail. The principal driving factor is and has always been whether or not bail is necessary to ensure that person's return to court. I believe in federal court it's a different formula where you can consider that person's potential for harm to the public or to an individual, but not so in state court. The only time it really comes close in state court is where you're dealing with someone who's charged with an offense against a so-called family member under the domestic violence laws, and that person may have a history of violating an order of protection, or the court can look at that person's history of use and possession of weapons, such as a handgun. But sad to say, but the reality is, public safety is not an on-the-record concern on the issue of bail. It's all about what is necessary to ensure the person's return to court.
Now, under the new law, under the reform law, before it was.
Well,
I mean, on
the record, it was always, what is the amount and form of bail that will be needed to ensure the defendant's return to court? And you can certainly consider the person's past history and the nature of the crime and whether he's got a history of violence. But technically, it has never been an on-the-record concern built into the statute.
So it's not really a change in the statute so much as a change in the thinking of the legislature and behind the law.
Right.
I just want to interrupt in case you just tuned in today. You are listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And in the studio with us today is Judge Timothy Fronczak, who is discussing with us the bail reforms, quote-unquote, bail law reforms in New York State that are going into effect January 1st. I wanted to, I saw, as I said, there's many stories about this, so and much has been written and said, and much is not understood. So I looked at this story, and it gave questions, and I thought, oh, these are good questions. I'll throw at Judge Fronczak, because maybe people are asking the same thing in their mind and don't have anybody to tell them, but now they do. Can a defendant still be held overnight after an arrest? When a defendant is arrested, let's say, I guess the scenario we gave you before, like either they're arrested at the Galleria for stealing something, allegedly, or they're arrested leaving somebody's home in a burglary, let's say. Can they be held overnight?
Under the new law? Yeah. The answer is that depends. But I can tell you that as of January 1st, the number of opportunities for mandatory appearance tickets in lieu of bringing somebody into custody and holding them for 24 hours before they see the judge at arraignment, that's increasing significantly. So unless a defendant is charged with a specific type of, a misdemeanor offense, for example, such as domestic violence, a sex offense, or the person has an outstanding warrant from another court, or in his record it shows that he has had warrants issued for him or has not appeared in the past couple of years, or the person is likely to have his or her license suspended, or there's likely to be an order of protection issued. Aside from those limited circumstances for a misdemeanor, as long as the defendant gives contact information that can be used to reach out to him or her, because now the courts will be under an obligation to notify them of upcoming court dates, believe it or not, the defendant will have to be given an appearance ticket. For most Class E felonies, aside from escape-related offenses or sex offenses, mandatory appearance tickets, they will not be mandatory for Class A, the higher felonies, D through Class A. Or if the defendant refuses to give contact information, then the person can be held. But for the most part, in most instances, the officers will have to give appearance tickets rather than bring the person into custody, as you say, overnight till they see the judge, because under the current law, they have to be brought before the judge within 24 hours. And once the appearance ticket is issued, the officer has within 24 hours to convey that person's contact information to the court, and the court in turn The arraignment has to be scheduled within no more than 20 days, and it's now the court's obligation, whether it does it directly through its staff or through some pretrial services agency, notify the defendant, oh, by the way, you've got a court date coming up in 2 weeks, so don't forget. And if the defendant doesn't show up within 2 weeks or whatever the return date is, the court can't just dash off a bench warrant. It's got to wait 48 hours and give the defense attorney or the defendant 48 hours to appear before the warrant is executed. So long answer to a short question is, or the short answer is, it depends.
On whether the person will be held overnight or
yeah.
not. But obviously, according to all examples you're giving, it's going to be rare.
Rare.
It
yeah,
be
the
rare.
Exception and not the rule. So the overriding theme in the reform is release over incarceration.
Okay. And when we were talking about, I got to go back to something you said. I think you said what OR means, right?
I didn't specify, but it's own recognizance.
Okay, we've explained that. But there are other forms. There's other forms of bail.
Yes.
Besides monetary bail, that can be set, and it says that judges will be required to set at least three types of bail, and it used an increase from at least two.
That's
what
right.
What do they mean by types of bail?
Well,
for people to know.
Bail can be set in different forms, right? The first of which is cash. So if it's $100 cash bail, you post $100 cash and you're free to go. If it's an insurance company bail bond, then you got to find your bail bonds person, pay him or her 10% of the total amount, and they in turn will secure, you know, get a bond to secure your return. Under the law, up until the end of this year, the judge who set bail had to set it in a minimum of two forms, typically cash or bond, or could be cash or property, or cash or signature bond. Now, on a case where the judge can set bail under a so-called qualifying offense, the minimum must be three different forms. Could be cash, could be bond, could be property, could be a secured bond, unsecured bond, a surety bond. It's a variety. It's an alphabet soup of possibilities. I think they call it A through H. But now it must be in three forms, at least one of which must be either secured, which means partially secured, rather, 10% of the total undertaking. So if it's a $10,000, it's $1,000. Or unsecured. So it's got to be one of those. And one of the factors that the court must take into account now is whether or not the defendant is financially able to meet that amount of bail. So if the defendant can't do it, the judge may have to rethink it and say, I've got to find a form of bail that you can make. Because again, the theme is release over incarceration. So the system is now will be set up in such a way to encourage, if not require, release rather than incarceration for all but the most serious of offenders, violent felony offenders, Class A felonies, and the like.
Oh, there's a question always comes up about drug offenses. Are they considered nonviolent? When is there a time? Because we hear so many cases where a person is charged with possession of drugs or selling drugs, or, you know, it's just been a constant theme, as
right.
you would say, over the years in criminal justice system.
You and I both know that many crimes of violence are tied up in one way, shape, or form with use of drugs, selling of drugs, people fighting over turf involving drugs and all that kind of business. But as it's in and of itself, a drug offense, whether misdemeanor or felony, is not a violent felony. And under the new laws, drug felonies, with one exception, do not qualify as money bail offenses. The only exception is if somebody is charged with a very specific offense of operating as a drug kingpin or a major drug dealer. So even a Class A drug felon, somebody's charged with a Class A drug felony, which in theory could result in someone going to prison for the rest of his or her life, but rarely happens, is not a money bail eligible offense. So even with drug felonies and drug misdemeanors, money bail will not be an option.
And then I wanted to go back to something that you were talking about before, so that we can explain to people what we mean when we say felony, serious felony charges as opposed, or violent felony as opposed to misdemeanors. Right. What are some examples?
Well, the main cutoff, generally speaking, to distinguish a misdemeanor from a felony is the amount of time someone is potentially facing. So if it's up to a year in a local correctional facility but no more, that's a misdemeanor. But if there's the potential for 1 year or more up to someone's life in prison, then you're talking about felonies. Now, violent felonies, it's interesting because crimes that you think would be a violent felony, such as manslaughter in the second degree, which is reckless manslaughter.
Where somebody dies,
okay, under the statute, is not a violent felony. So in order to answer that question, you have to go to the penal law. I think it's section 70.02 for the nerds in the group, or the lawyers.
Who we hope are listening.
Which basically have a laundry list of felonies that qualify as violent. Some of them are intuitive and they make sense because the violence is built into the crime, such as assault in the first degree, second degree,
homicide.
Rape. Homicide, arson, those kinds of, but there are some that you wouldn't know it unless you looked at the statute, and some which you think should be violent but are not. But those are some of the distinguishing factors.
And it's another thing that I wanted to talk about is when you said a person is going to have to be notified, and the defendant is charged with a crime and is going to be released, but has to give information. Like, what kind of information are the courts requiring, or can they require to find this person again,
well,
assuming they're released?
The defendant is expected to fill out a form that says, here's where I live, or here's where my mailing address is. This is my phone number. And we know from experience that many defendants live fluid lives. And sometimes the information they give is not always accurate, or even if it's accurate, it may be not accurate next week.
It may change.
But they're supposed to give their best contact information, where they currently reside, where they get their mail, where they can be reached by phone, and if it's it could be a relative's address, wherever they can best be notified, because the obligation now is upon the court or whatever agency it designates, and that's another question which I think is still up in the air, to leave a message on that person's cell phone, send a text message if that's their preferred method of contact, or send a letter by first class mail saying, remember that you have a court date coming up on such and such a date, and if you don't show up, we may issue a warrant, but not right away, because you'll still have 48 hours to show up. If you don't, I mean, so in some ways, I think the fangs and the teeth are being removed from the tiger, so to speak. And I just wonder if judges in many ways will be just wrist slappers and finger waggers, and if defendants will soon realize, well, hey, what do I need to show up for? On the other hand, there are those who say that in states where this has already gone into effect, I think North Carolina is one, maybe New Jersey, there haven't been the types of problems that people are now worried about, that defendants are showing up to court. I think the proof will be in the pudding, and time will tell whether or not all the things that people are concerned about will come to pass.
And you're listening to Judge Fronczak on Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And finally, or not finally, but almost finally, there are conditions aside from the bail issue. There are times that when judges can still set conditions of release, such
yes.
as, giving you examples, but you mentioned probation before, or there are other conditions that
yes.
may be set, correct?
Yes. In fact, there's what I call a hierarchy or totem pole of options. The most basic being OR, own recognizance, where there are no conditions. The defendant is left to his or her own devices to come back to court. Then you have, if the court finds or believes, for whatever reason, that this defendant poses a so-called risk of flight to avoid prosecution, then the court can impose what are known as non-monetary conditions, such as a curfew, restrictions on where the person can and can't go. So it's restrictions on travel. Or might say, well, you seem to have a drug problem, so I'm going to make sure that you enroll in a drug rehab program. But the purpose is really to make that person more responsible and responsive to the court. Or it could be to abide by an order of protection. But under the statute as it is drafted, the court must impose, quote unquote, the least restrictive conditions. So they must be the bare minimum to ensure return to court. And if, over time, the defendant demonstrates a track record of compliance, the court must entertain a motion to relax those conditions. And on the other hand, if the defendant is in violation of conditions, the court can't just willy-nilly say, I'm revoking your status and I'm going to set bail on you now. The court must first get the defendant to come to court, whether with a bench warrant or not, and then hold a hearing, at which time the defendant has the right to cross-examine witnesses, present evidence.
As to why they why they violated,
right,
or why they didn't fulfill the terms that were set by the court. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And if the defendant doesn't show up, the court has to be satisfied that the non-appearances are willful, as opposed to maybe just missing the alarm clock or not setting it.
Overslept. Missed the bus.
Yes. Willful and deliberate and repetitive, persistent. So a one-shot non-appearance may not be enough to say, okay, I'm now going to revoke your bail, your release status, and set monetary bail. The rules are very specific on when the court can set bail on someone who's released on a low-level offense and violates conditions.
Okay, so really what we're talking about in many senses is the elimination of bail. However, I guess we should conclude by saying, remember, a person is charged, the people we're talking about are charged with crimes, but they are not yet convicted. It's
right.
Not going to change the sentencing if the person is convicted,
right.
Correct?
And so the idea is someone who is not convicted still enjoys the presumption of innocence, so it's unfair in the legislature's thinking to incarcerate them before that presumption has been disposed of by way of a guilty verdict. And bail, I don't want to suggest that bail is not an option in some cases, but it's got to be the violent felonies, specified nonviolent felonies, and only two misdemeanors. And then remand, putting somebody in jail without bail, it has to be a qualifying offense, such as a violent felony, but it also has to be a felony. So remand is limited. And, for violations of conditions, the court has to take a close look and have a hearing before it can decide to either set bail on a low-level offender or remand somebody who's out on bail.
Now, times are changing, the law is changing, and we're about to see what's going to happen and how it's going to play out from January 1st on, correct?
Exactly.
Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. Time will tell.
Will you come back?
Whenever
Judge Franzak will come
sure.
back. Okay, thank you. To be continued. Thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you've learned something from our conversation, and we've talked about an issue and something that is current and that you care about and would like to know more about. So listen to On Target every week, and have a good week. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.